From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition, and I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Coming up, robots in the classroom? A Western New York school district was planning to use a lifelike AI-powered robot in the classroom as a teacher's assistant. Following public outcry, those plans are now on pause. But how did those plans get started in the first place, and what's going to happen next? Patricio Rubio talks to Melissa Mano from New York Focus. Get all the details in this robotic saga. And just today, New York State United Teachers, as a teachers union for the state, it publicly called for new limits on AI in schools. Kimberly Izar talks to union president Melinda Person about their concerns. Both those stories are coming right up. And in the second half of the program, Rebecca Hendricks checks in with Sullivan County historian John Conway about a new one-woman historical play that's coming up. But first, we'll get the latest news from Albany, where today New York Governor Kathy Hochul said the recently enacted data center moratorium is not a ban. Rather, she says it's an attempt to get it right. In an interview with WAMC, Hochul reiterated that the state is not hostile to innovation or development. Instead, the Democrat said, the moratorium is meant to let New York be the first to get it right when it comes to data centers.
So I'm just saying, let's look at the energy consumption, bring your own power, tell the communities what they should be asking for, and no more tax breaks. I don't think that our hardworking New Yorkers should be having to subsidize these companies that are making wild profits and while taking up our land, our water, resources, and energy.
Earlier this month, Hochul signed an executive order placing a one-year moratorium on data centers that consume 50 megawatts or more of electricity. A similar, more detailed moratorium on 20-megawatt facilities was passed by the New York legislature, but it has not yet been signed by the governor. A new report finds that New York has to spend a half a trillion dollars to combat the effects of climate change, and that's a conservative estimate. The report from Rebuild by Design cited research of in-progress, recently completed, and planned adaptation projects across New York State. The group's Niati Johnson says while potential costs are higher in coastal areas, the rest of the state is not immune.
We know that when governments don't invest in adaptation, greater costs get passed on to residents in the form of tax increases, insurance hikes, home repairs, business losses, etc.
Thank you to the New York Public News Network for those reports. Now for our main story tonight, robots in the classroom. A plan to bring a humanoid robot into a Western New York high school classroom has been put on hold for now. The Salamanca City Central School District announced that it's pausing the rollout of its AI-powered teaching assistant, which is called Sally, by the way, after New York State Education Commissioner Betty Rosa raised concerns about student data privacy and the use of this technology in schools. The district says it will continue working with state officials and engaging with the community before deciding what comes next. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio spoke with Melissa Mano, education reporter for New York Focus, about what changed, why the state stepped in, and what this means for the future of artificial intelligence in New York classrooms.
So this program was going to be in this upcoming school year. Tell us what changed, what prompted this change to the district?
So on Friday, Salamanca City Central School District announced on social media that its pilot project with the tech company Realbotics has been put on hold, like you said, as school officials work through some enhanced student data privacy agreements with the state education agency. This announcement came shortly after the state's education commissioner, Betty Rosa, sent a letter to the district informing the superintendent that the state remained concerned about the effect that a humanoid robot may have within a high school classroom. According to that letter, the department had met with the school district earlier in the week to discuss the robot. But Rosa acknowledged that many parents, teachers, and other stakeholders were understandably concerned about the presence of AI technology in classrooms, and I quote, particularly when it involves robots that resemble humans. She had said in this letter that if the district decided to move forward with the project, sort of against their recommendation, that the state would be monitoring it for potential instructional, legal, privacy, and security issues that might arise. And of course, that letter wasn't the first time that the district was made aware of opposition to this investment. Since the announcement about a month ago, and since our news report, there has been a wave of backlash on social media. Certainly some support for this pilot project, but I think overwhelming opposition to the idea. The state teachers union last week had also put out a statement urging the district not to move forward with the project. So they're celebrating this now as a win. Realbotix CEO Andrew Kegel said the company fully respects any decision the school makes and encourages thorough due diligence by all parties involved, that they want the program to be fully district approved and supported by all teachers. However, he did say that the company stands firmly behind its products as supportive tools designed to assist teachers, not to replace them. So it's certainly a development. I do think it's important to note, however, that the district isn't saying that this isn't going to happen at all. They've just said that it's being put on pause as these additional guardrails are identified and as community members have more of an opportunity to weigh in. So whether or not students will be in a classroom with a robot this year remains to be seen.
If you just give an overview of what was the plans, original plans for Sally, this robot in the classrooms, it was supposed to be sort of an AI teaching assistant for the teacher in the class, right?
Yeah, totally. So the program was two products were going to be deployed in the classroom. The first is this AI-powered teacher's assistant program that allowed students to interact with an avatar that looked just like the robot on their laptops. And so students could access this avatar during and after school hours to receive help with assignments. They could upload photos of their homework for feedback, ask the avatar to generate lessons on topics that interest them, or receive real-time translations in over 100 languages. And then when they arrived in the classroom, students could use this unique identification code to interact with the humanoid robot and allow it to access their learning data based on their past communication with the avatar. So to simplify that, the CEO provided this example that a student would walk up to the robot and say, "Hi, I'm student number 1234." And then the robot would say, "Hi, so-and-so, we were talking about this topic yesterday. Do you want to continue that conversation?" So the two products were intended to really work in conjunction to support student learning, provide personalized tutoring to students based off of the topics that they were struggling in, maybe areas in which they were excelling. And also, it was intended to provide some sort of support to teachers as well. So another example that was provided was if a teacher is in the middle of a class lesson and forgets the next part of that lesson, they can stop, turn to the robot and say, "Hey, Sally, what comes next?" And then the robot would provide guidance and direction on the next part of that class lesson. Salamanca planned to introduce the robot and avatar in its high school AI and robotics courses, which used curriculum developed by Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak to prepare students for high-demand tech jobs. And then if it went well, the district said it would potentially expand it to other high school students and other classes. And so both the AI assistant program and the humanoid robot have been put on hold right now, but it's unclear what will happen moving forward, if they might deploy one of them, and while they figure out, you know, the other, all of that is yet to be seen.
I'm familiar with the WAS program within schools because I know some of our schools here in Sullivan County, where we're based out of, uses the program, and a lot of students mm-hmm. are building robots in classrooms. I sort of demonstrated they're controlling the robots with their iPads. And, you know, a lot of schools now also have robotics teams. They're competing for state. So that interest is there. Did seem like a definite jump forward as far as like bringing a full humanoid robot into the classroom. And but you said before, this wasn't looking to replace the teacher. It was just to sort of assist the learning in the classroom.
Definitely. And actually at a school board meeting last week, before the project was announced to be put on hold, the superintendent was sort of acknowledging the backlash and the opposition and had sort of noted that, you know, this isn't an entirely new idea that AI is in schools and in classrooms, and really that he believed a lot of the opposition and backlash was due to the fact that the humanoid robot was modeled after a human. You know, it would have had a really lifelike appearance with silicone skin, brown hair. You know, it would have been stationary in a seated position, but it would have had a wide range of facial expressions and arm movements. And I think reading a lot of the comments that parents and community members have left online and talking to stakeholders, I think that the idea of this entity in a classroom that is not human and yet appears to be so disturbed a lot of people. And it is that aspect of it is completely new. It's uncharted territory in education. And so it's not surprising that there's a lot of fear around it.
Was there any controversy or backlash on sort of the connection of this company to a Real Doll, which is a sort of love doll for adults? Was there any sort of backlash on that?
Yes, absolutely. That certainly came up a lot. So for background, education is an entirely new venture for this tech company, Realbotics. It's a Toronto-based robotics company that was formerly known as Tokens.com. Tokens.com was a cryptocurrency company that helped customers rent digital land in the metaverse. In April of 2024, the company acquired Simulacra, which is the Las Vegas parent company behind Real Doll, which, as you mentioned, is known for creating these hyper-realistic sex dolls and sex robots that are still on the market today. You know, in a statement to New York Focus, a spokesperson for Realbotics emphasized that over the past 2 years, they've built an entirely new team with new staff that they've focused on expanding in commercial settings like education and healthcare and wellness, and that they don't share employees, payroll, or physical locations with Real Doll. However, that understandably is raising a lot of concerns for parents, for stakeholders, and educators who say that a company associated with the adult entertainment industry, particularly in creating these hyper-realistic sex dolls, has no place in the classroom. The spokesperson noted that Realbotics is looking to sell Real Doll and sort of separate the entities so that these concerns are not as, you know, prevalent. And while the company tries to once again expand in commercial settings, but still, it's also really well known for just in general companion robots, which are different from sex robots, but they're intended to address what's described as a loneliness epidemic. And the CEO has previously said that the company's goal is to produce robots that are indistinguishable from humans. That has absolutely come up as a concern. In fact, in the teachers' union statement from earlier this week, NYSET president Melinda Person had absolutely emphasized that, once again, a company associated with sex dolls has no place, no business in our classrooms. She also emphasized that robots, no matter how lifelike they may appear, are not capable of the human connection students require in order to thrive. And in that same statement, she had said that the teachers union was committed to fighting thoughtless expansion of this technology, not only in Salamanca, but across the state, especially as the state sort of tries to figure out, you know, a framework to guide school districts on these sorts of purchases. Right now, we're sort of in this weird territory where school districts don't really know what is and is not acceptable. And I think Salamanca is kind of providing a cautionary tale to a lot of school districts looking to invest in similar technology.
Yeah, definitely. Now, the State Department stepped in here, I think, fairly quickly here. Mm-hmm. Is that usual for the State Education Department to do this?
You know, it's not unusual. I think that they were certainly aware of the level of backlash that the school district was encountering here and certainly feeling a lot of pressure from the teachers' union as well. And there was an urgency because the new school year is quickly approaching and this robot could have been in the classroom this time next month interacting with students. So I think that, you know, getting involved at the time they did was the smartest sort of approach to this. Once again, they're not saying that the district can't move forward at all. In fact, even in their letter, they acknowledged that the school district might go ahead and do this. And they said, you know, if that's the case, we're going to keep an eye on the district. They didn't direct them to put the project on pause. That was entirely the school district's decision to sort of work through these additional data agreements. So, yeah, not unusual. I think that if the district does end up moving forward with this in the future, they're going to have a lot of eyes on them, including the state education agency, including the teachers unions, and certainly parents, community members, and everyone else that has seen the story online and has had their interest piqued.
Now, Melissa, what should we be watching out for in the next couple of days? And what's the next development you'll be paying close attention to?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, of course, we'll be seeing how this development sort of progresses, whether there's going to be, you know, any information provided about what exactly the school district will be doing in the next few weeks. I'm curious what these data agreements are going to look like and what the initial agreements left out that caused the state to sort of raise their eyebrows. Actually, New York Focus will be publishing tomorrow a video of a demonstration, I had the opportunity to interview Sally, the AI teaching assistant, about 2 weeks ago, and was able to ask the avatar a variety of questions, including about its purpose, its capabilities, how it would respond to questions a student might ask about issues they experience at school, like encountering a bully or witnessing a student with a firearm, asking the AI to complete their homework for them. So I was able to ask the avatar these questions. We recorded it, and we'll be posting the video so that people can sort of see a little bit more about, sort of witness how the AI would have interacted with students. And yeah, we'll just be monitoring to see whether or not the district is going to hold town halls or board meetings where stakeholders, community members can voice their opinions on this, as well as see if other school districts across the state are looking to invest in similar technology. I think that what happened in Salamanca was noteworthy for a lot of reasons, but it's not necessarily unique in the sense that it was a school district looking for innovative ways to engage students in STEM. There are many programs and products that tech companies are pushing for school districts to purchase. And so we are definitely interested in reporting a little bit more on what those products look like, how students are interacting with AI in classrooms, and how parents and community members feel about it.
Well, we're talking to Melissa Mano, education reporter with New York Focus. You can read her latest reporting on the Salamanca School District and the debate over artificial intelligence in education at New York Focus. And look out for that video that's happening tomorrow. Melissa, thank you so much for joining us again and helping us, you know, keep up with this developing story.
Thank you so much for having me. Anytime.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. Well, now we're going to continue with this story. Specifically, we're going to find out what teachers are saying, because following events in Salamanca and amid increasing scrutiny of the role of AI in classrooms, the New York State United Teachers issued a statement just today calling on the state to establish enforceable statewide guardrails for AI in schools. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar spoke with Melinda Person, president of New York State United Teachers, about increasing concerns among teachers on how AI technology could shape student learning. This conversation was recorded just before the Salamanca School District paused its plan to put a humanoid robot in the classroom. But the concerns of the teachers still remain. And Kimberly pointed out that the company that the school district was going to purchase their robot from is called Realbotics, and it also sells real dolls, which are robot sex dolls. So we start with NYSUT President Melinda Person explaining what she's hearing from educators about that fact in particular.
They just can't even believe this is true. It feels like an Onion article when you read this stuff in the paper, or science fiction. But, you know, the company has tried to say that they have walled off that body of work from the work that they're doing in classrooms. But, you know, their background and whether they're an appropriate vendor for a school, I mean, it's pretty clear to us that it's inappropriate. And, you know, the fact that they're spending almost $60,000 on this robot and not spending that money on hiring an actual human teaching assistant that the district could desperately use, you know, that is really problematic from our perspective. What concerns us is that this robot is designed to have empathy, to build relationships, to try to simulate human relationships with students. And that is exactly the opposite direction that we should be going. We need more caring adults in front of our students. We do not need robot simulations.
You know, New York State United Teachers, your labor union representing over nearly 700,000, you know, professionals across the state's schools and colleges, healthcare facilities. How would you say, you know, you're seeing technology, specifically the use of AI, changing the classrooms and student learning?
Well, the use of AI in the classroom right now really lacks significant and appropriate guardrails. We are seeing that kids are having, in multiple grade levels, access via their school Chromebooks and technology that they shouldn't. That's one of the reasons that we have very specifically called for limiting access to AI for our students that is not supervised by an educator, by an adult. because of the type of content that they're able to access. We also are really sensitive to the problem of something called cognitive offloading, which is basically when our students are using AI to do the thinking for them, to do the hard work and the learning. And so we are adjusting how we teach and our lesson plans to give kids the space that they need to grow those foundational skills, and so that they don't just go to ChatGPT and ask the answer. They need to learn those skills before they can use the technology as a tool.
Right. There are these long-lasting impacts on some of these foundational skills that yeah. students could potentially be missing out on. You know, Melinda, I'm curious what kind of precedent, if any, you think this might set for other school districts, you know, not only in New York, but across the country.
Well, we are asking the State Education Department and legislators to intervene here in this instance. Immediately to make sure that this does not go forward. But we believe that we're going to be facing these types of proposals coming at us across the country and in other districts in New York State. And we just have to continue to stand up for human-centered education. I think, you know, there are things that AI can do. There are things that robots can do. But the work of teaching and educating children is not one of them.
And, you know, as you look to the future of education, are there any immediate next steps or actions you think that the union is planning on taking when it comes to the role of technology in the classrooms?
Well, we are going to be holding a conference this September in Albany where we're going to be bringing together educators and school district leadership, parents and students to come together and talk about the role of technology in our schools because we are rethinking this sort of narrative that's been out there that more technology equals more learning. And that just is not the case. What we are seeing now is that, especially in the younger grades, that too much screen time is detrimental to learning. And we're seeing that, you know, we have always had these device policies that we've pushed for, one-to-one devices for every child as early as kindergarten, which, you know, now we've looked at all of the research is telling us that that is developmentally inappropriate, that our youngest kids are not getting the hands-on learning that they need. They come to school and, you know, they're not able to hold a pencil because they're so used to doing work on screens, things like that. So there's a whole lot of I think, recalibrating the use of technology in our schools that needs to happen. And we are leading the way in that work.
Big thanks to Kimberly Izar for that interview. Again, she spoke with Melinda Person, president of NYSUT, just before we learned Salamanca School District was pausing, for now, its plan to put a robot teacher's assistant in a classroom. It is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. And a new one-woman play is coming to the Narrowsburg Union this Saturday. It's called A Revolution of Her Own, the Deborah Sampson story. The play is written and performed by Judith Kalaara of History at Play. To find out more about the event and the story of Deborah Sampson, reporter Rebecca Hendricks spoke with the Sullivan County historian, John Conway.
Welcome to Radio Catskill, John.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk about Sullivan County history.
There's a new one-woman play coming to Sullivan County. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Sure. The play is A Revolution of Her Own, and it is the story of Deborah Sampson. And I'll tell you a little bit about Deborah Sampson in a moment. But the play is actually written and produced and performed by a woman named Judith Kalaara, and she founded a group a number of years ago called History at Play, and they're based in the Boston area. And she's been to Sullivan County. This will be her third trip here, actually. A couple of years ago, she did this same play at Fort Delaware Museum. And last year, she was back to do a play about Rachel Revere, Paul Revere's wife, and it was actually a one-woman play about Paul Revere's famous ride as seen through the eyes of his wife, who was cut off from him for 3 weeks without knowing if he'd been captured or killed or what had become of him. So very, very stirring story. But Deborah Sampson is a great story in and of itself. And, of course, this is all part of the Sullivan County Semi-Quincentennial Commission's commemoration of America's 250th birthday. So Deborah Sampson was a young woman who disguised herself as a man, took the identity of a man named Robert Shurtleff, and she enlisted in the Continental Army and was stationed in the Hudson Valley, so right here in the immediate area. And at that time, the Hudson Valley was notorious as the neutral ground, so it really wasn't controlled by either the British or the Americans, and so it was sort of a thriving area for outlaws, and it was up to the various military units to control that. They were terrorizing the citizens and robbing and murdering and plundering at will. And so Deborah Sampson was attached to those military units, actually ends up getting wounded, and tried to hide the wound so that her gender would not be revealed, and eventually begins to run a high fever from her wound and passes out, and they take her to the medical people and discover that she's a woman. And so she's discharged, but she does end up getting a pension as a combatant. She's the first woman to get a pension from the U.S. government as a combatant. So that's the story, and Judith does a great job with it. We're looking forward to it. It's Saturday, August 1st at the Narrowsburg Union.
Wow, that sounds like a really interesting story. How did we find out about this story of Deborah Sampson?
Well, the story of Deborah Sampson is fairly well documented throughout Revolutionary War literature. People who wanted to remain loyal to the king, to Great Britain, then there were rebels or patriots. So when the fighting actually begins in 1775, those who were in favor of independence, they're outnumbered and they feel very insecure on the frontier here because of the fact that they're outnumbered. So most of them leave the settlement and they end up going downriver where there are more like-minded people. So they go to other settlements like Minnesingan Peenpack and Mahakamak and Goshen and so on, where there are more rebels or patriots. And the loyalists remain in the settlement throughout the war. They're secure in their numbers, and the two groups do interact throughout the war. They attack each other's settlements and burn down houses, murder families. The atrocities are pretty horrible on both sides, but the loyalists remain here throughout the war. But then the war ends with the Treaty of Paris in 1783, and there's no real provision made for what is to become of the loyalists. And if they hadn't taken up arms against the colonies, their status is really sort of in limbo. They don't really want to stay here. They don't feel comfortable. No one really wants them here. And so most of them leave. A lot of them end up going to Canada. And that's why our first settlement, Cushetunk, is abandoned by about 1785. Eventually, people begin to trickle back in. And of course, this all predates the formation of Sullivan County in 1809. But the roots of the county are here. And it's a great story, and it's one that we tell every day at Fort Delaware.
Well, I'm super excited for people to find out more about this period and more about some of the soldiers that were fighting in the Revolutionary War at this one-woman play featuring the story of Deborah Sampson. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, again, thank you for the opportunity to talk about it. And once again, if I might just finish with a final plug. It is Saturday, August 1st, 7 p.m. at Narrowsburg Union, which is 7 Erie Street in Narrowsburg. It is free to the public, but you must pre-register jconway52@hotmail.com to pre-register. And we look forward to seeing everyone on Saturday, August 1st.
That was the Sullivan County historian, John Conway. You can find out more on this story on our website, wjffradio.org. In Liberty, I'm Rebecca Hendricks for Radio Catskill.
Big thanks to Rebecca Hendricks for bringing us that conversation. Thanks to Sullivan County historian John Conway. And thank you for being here with me. I'm Jason Dole, and that is it for the local edition tonight. Stay with us, because coming up in just a moment, we'll have more news on the way from the Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.